Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and this is a special holiday bonus episode as we are right here in the middle of the holiday season, and we are going to touch on two of people's favorite things about the holidays, and that is, holiday work parties, which we all love and hate at the same time, as well as holiday music and holiday shows. And I've got two special guests. I have Drew Larimore and Billy Reese here to talk about their holiday musical. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Yuletide greetings.
Yuletide greetings, as we will find out. You guys have written a show called The Bestest Office Christmas Party Ever, which we are going to talk about. It has an EP of songs from the show. And before we jump into the show itself, I guess we'll talk about the show, kind of the beginnings of the show. But how did you guys join forces to work together?
Well, I had been roaming the streets sort of like, the loose woman of the stairwell looking for a composer for this project for years, because I had always wanted to really write a satirical holiday show that frankly has not been written in the way that we've been able to, I think, pull this off. There are some David Sedaris adaptations and some various, you know, irreverent offerings out there for the holidays, for maybe second stages, if they still exist in some regional theaters. But something that was really took it a step further, that was very irreverent, very bawdy, and sort of made fun of that holiday spiral and existential crisis that we all experience, I think, at the end of the year, particularly at a high pressure office Christmas party that goes awry. So, I wish I could say Billy came to me right away. It took a while to find him, but good things are worth waiting for. And I finally found him. We were introduced through a colleague. And I just fell in love with his stuff right away as a composer. And he, I think, had sent me he's written a musical about the Balloon Boy, you know, that new story that was around for a while, a long time ago, as well as he did a very mocking show about a tele-evangelist. And so anyway, so it just, he was my style, my sense of humor, and we got each other instantly. So we connected probably about 4 years ago and then began shaping this. And finally I found my guy to do this with. And so we've been working on it ever since. So
yeah, I will never forget that first sort of table read of this piece before songs were written, and I went in just to like hear it and hear what you had, and it was just so freaking funny. And I was like, I need to do this. I need to do this. And yeah, we've been having so much fun working on it, and are so grateful that we got a chance to get some fun folks in the studio to record these songs.
So listeners may remember that Drew was on just a few weeks ago talking about another musical, The New Peggy.
And so my God, kind of, Drew, 10 appearances on this show and you get a free coffee.
I know. He's got, did you get your punch card? You should have gotten your punch card in the mail.
I got the other thing, but I wasn't sure what to do with it.
Right. Anyway, so talk about how did you come up with this idea? I mean, I know that you said you wanted to do kind of a satirical look, but how did you come up with the plot and the setting? Because tell the listeners a little bit, kind of a brief synopsis of what the show is.
Sure. Well, I wrote the book. Billy and I did co-lyrics, and then Billy has done the score. So in terms of the actual plot, I believe it was initially inspired by two terrifying traditional holiday songs. First of all, I love Halloween decorations. That season has just ended. I don't think it pretends to be anything that it isn't. I live in Park Slope, so we have really hardcore Halloween decorations here in this part of Brooklyn. And I was thinking, as Halloween was coming to an ending, oh my God, the holiday decorations are coming out, and how disingenuous I find them. And I think that this thought has been with me for a while. And two songs that come to mind that inspired this along that thinking was I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, which is a terrifying song of a young child basically watching his parents' marriage fall apart. And then It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year, which it is not the most wonderful time of the year. It is a very challenging time of the year for many people. And and I guess I get a little outraged when we get into all of that, that cheesiness. So I have been to a few holiday parties, as I'm sure we all have. They are often obligatory, and no one's comfortable. Everyone drinks too much. I have a good friend that used to work at the top of the rung in HR, and she always used to tell me funny holiday party stories about how people would have to be fired for making inappropriate advances. So I just had always thought it was right material for a show. Of course, it's been a movie, but it's yet to be a musical. That topic. So these characters sort of came to life. They're kind of stock characters. They're all missing something. It's sort of a hodgepodge group of four lackluster workers that work at an adult diaper factory for incontinent adults. And they are waiting anxiously for their Christmas bonus that their boss is to hand deliver dressed as Santa. And he doesn't show up. So chaos ensues with a very angry, controlling office manager who we have as played on the EP as Paige Turner. It's written for a drag performer. And each of them sort of undergoes their own holiday dilemma as they debate their future with the company and moving forward.
I love that you brought up I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. That song really is horrifying. Oh my God, that horrifying. Kid is going to be in so much therapy. Oh my God, what is his copay like? Good Lord. Poor thing.
No, it's been around for ages, as is the most wonderful time of the year. I mean, it's like no one is really listening. You know, I don't know. I just, I have a birthday 5 days after Christmas, so I have a complicated relationship. So between Christmas, my birthday, and New Year's, it's a really challenging 6 days of change. And I always dread it. So my only way of really dealing with that is to create something facetious, tongue in cheek, flip, sort of fresh, and a little sassy, humorous, and body. And I think we did that and then some with this particular piece. So everyone does get a Christmas wish. It's not like it ends in a horrible mass shooting or tragedy or anything. but so
not in this draft.
No.
It is fun, and I think Billy's score harkens upon many many traditional holiday tunes and jingles that we would want to hear during this. So my goal for this was to make this have a piece where we come, and this is for people who want to watch a show at Christmas, that don't want to watch The Nutcracker, that don't want to see A Christmas Carol for the 14th insert expletive time, and that want to watch something that makes fun of Christmas, that perhaps they also have conflicting feelings about this time of year that I do, maybe with a drink in their hand and you know, having a good time. So that was our goal with this. And as far as we're concerned, there's nothing else that is like this out there right now that pushes us to this level.
So talk about your writing process, since you had not worked together before. So when you sat down to actually flesh this out, how did it work between you guys?
Yeah, I mean,
well, like we subletted an apartment together.
Yes, exactly. Uh-huh. We moved up to the Berkshires.
Yep.
Yes.
We adopted.
Yes, yep. We adopted a child. Uh-huh. We opened a bed and breakfast. you know, Drew had already had this fabulous draft of the show that had sort of all the songs, where the songs might be in them, and sort of just a little description of what each of those songs might say, you know, a potential hook. And that was so helpful for me to sort of go off and brainstorm on that and sort of fill in the gaps. You know, Drew does this great thing that that I believe James Lapine and Stephen Sondheim also did, where he'll write up a little monologue for what the song might be, or like a scene for what the song might be. And then, you know, I can sort of steal from that and sort of structure the song out of it. So it really was a true like pass around moment with collaboratively speaking. I think we are just sort of so matched in our temperaments. You know, we're both like, here's what I'm thinking. Go take a couple days, look at this and do your thing, and then come back to me, and then let's talk and play with it. So yeah, it was just a thrilling process. And the show has changed a lot since that first draft, of course. You know, there were a lot of different plot twists that have twisted in different directions since then. But the process has always sort of been just, you know, leading with a conversation and a potential monologue or scene, and going from there.
And often very conceptual. I think some of the songs are very plot driven, but I would say a good portion of them are conceptual. Billy got the concept right away. And I think the score is a little all over the place in terms of kind of a 60s doo-wop number, The Santa for Me, which has been a number we have not gotten rid of that's been in the show since its very inception, versus, you know, Mary Testa solo on our EP, Sex Machine Robot, which is like nothing else, I think, out there in terms of a harrowing story of a very privileged lady. So yeah, it was just a thrill. Billy's a fast writer. So, you know, oftentimes I'd get something overnight or in the next few days. And so it was pretty exhilarating, you know, being in that Berkshire apartment together, going back and forth on yes. this.
When I was a little girl at my windowsill,
long before your decals,
I teach stray kittens ASL.
And how to drink from teacups.
When the other neighborhood girls would dream of Santa Claus coming down in his boots and suit, I'd have to take pause.
What was your problem, Pooh?
Well, I wasn't like other girls. I didn't take their lead. A bearded old man was far too German for my speed.
It's not that the Santa everyone loves and adores is a bad one.
Oh, no, and it's not that he doesn't spread love and joy.
He certainly does.
Mm-hmm.
For me to care, he'd have to air a bit less Saint Nick and more Ric Flair. The Santa for me, the Santa for me. He's big and he's bold and buff and jacked. Two globular goodies in his sack that I'm hungry for. The Santa for me, the Santa for me. There isn't a lot behind his eyes. A himbo with massive tree trunk thighs. Hell, who'd ask for more? Santa for me.
I was a little girl in a trailer park
back in Tallahassee.
And get off on People magazine.
You were super classy.
And I thought my feminist heroes weren't Curie or Sporty Spice. I saw Glory instead in Anna Nicole and Heidi Fleiss. They proved that the classy girls never give. To remove his teeth at night, tell stories of Warsaw by the light of a nursing home suite. The Santa for me, the Santa for me. He's like a fine wine aged to its peak. He napped like a fiend through the work week and used tubes to eat. He's out there seizing constantly. Oh, maybe that baby'd be the Santa for me.
Wow.
Kirsten, sounds like you want a Santa on death's door.
No, he doesn't have to be dying. He just has to be a man of few words, because he can't remember them, and even if he did, he'd get confused and grab his pants.
You know, I've always had trouble finding a man on my level.
Can't imagine why.
No one shares my mutual interests in sharp objects or forensic files.
Sing it, Carol.
The Santa for me, the Santa for me, can fend off 12 ninjas like a pro, is trained in jujitsu and judo, and knows it's an art. The Santa for me, the Santa for me, has more than a pocket knife to yield, but his pistol's the only thing concealed, not shy with his heart. Can kick an ass just like Bruce Lee, oh, maybe that babe he'd be.
The Santa for me, the Santa for me, I know he'll appear before my eyes. We'll come in a different shape and size than the usual kind. The Santa for me, the Santa for me, we'll find him one golden Christmas morn. He'll slide down the chimney like a porn, just like in my mind.
In all seriousness, the pandemic sort of helped a lot too, you know, right. With this new draft, because, you know, we had been working on this pre-pandemic. And then I think the isolation of that early pandemic really sort of instilled a lot of thematic elements that we wanted to touch upon with this show, and sort of clarified next steps for this current rewrite, essentially. And because of that time off, I was sort of able to write a lot of these songs really fast and just sort of like hunker down and create. And so in some ways it was a real blessing.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that, because from what I was reading, it sounds like the finished product finally got done basically in December of 2020. So
in some ways,
right in the midst of the pandemic. So, which is the first, it was really the first holiday season of lockdown, excuse me. So, which was a really stressful holiday season for everybody, because it was pre-vaccine and nobody knew what we were supposed to be doing for holiday season. And people were, you know, it's the time of year, everybody's expected to get together with friends and relatives, and we were social distancing still. And so, you know, this piece is kind of reflective in some ways of that time, because it's got a lot of the anxiousness of that particular holiday season. So you said that working on it during that part of the pandemic, certainly it allowed you to really focus on it. But do you think that some of the stress and strain of the pandemic fed into the work itself?
100%, especially the specific production that you're talking about was this like Zoom production of it that we did in December of 2020. And that is just like a whole other element of like office culture at that time, with all its sort of, you know, intricacies and just like awkwardness and the delays and the like trying to like throw parties on Zoom and everything.
Right.
And that I think like even more so clarified like just the ridiculousness of this culture and, you know, and as ridiculous as it is, you know, to like throw a dumb holiday office party, it is also something that like our human spirit needs, you know. It is sort of a necessary evil, I think, to, you know, to see other human beings around the holiday season in any capacity that we can, even if it is delayed and there are lags on the Wi-Fi and whatever. So that was really thrilling to experiment with, you know. We have not yet released the Zoom version of the musical for licensing, but, you know, we're in talks. No, we're not.
Let's not direct people to that Zoom thing. Let's stick with the EP, Billy.
Well, and as true as we were saying, you know, the holiday time of year is when, you know, theaters around the country are doing God knows how many versions of A Christmas Carol that are out there. or they're doing the musical version of Scrooge, or they're doing ballet companies are doing Nutcracker, and they are looking for other holiday things they can do. And there are a lot of, there are a lot of them that are looking for satirical pieces. I mean, I think people, especially post-pandemic, I think people are looking for things that do take a more wizened look at the holiday season. And I think people are ready for that. Because I have found people take a totally different look at holiday parties now. And how silly they can be, and how, because I know, you know, I've worked at very large corporate type firms where they used to spend a fortune on holiday parties every year. I mean, like a fortune, hiring big name musical acts to come in and perform.
My God.
And
think how many new musicals they could have developed with money.
Well, and it eventually kind of got to the point where they would say, you know, we're spending this fortune on all this stuff, and the employees would love it and things, but ultimately they made the decision to scale back and instead give that money to charities to feed homeless people and to do good work instead of feeding their employees and hiring overpaid rock stars to come in and perform.
Sure.
Because people are looking at the silliness and the consumerism of the holiday season. And so talk about where you think this show kind of fits into the repertoire of what holiday shows should be. Because I like the idea of, I really don't have a problem with theater companies still doing A Christmas Carol or doing, you know, because God knows things like White Christmas are now starting to make the rounds of standard shows that theater companies are doing at the holidays. I don't have a problem with that because they're things that you can take the entire family to, but we do need a variety of these kinds of shows, including more adult-oriented funny
shows.
There's
room for both. There's room for both. Yeah.
When I grew up, I grew up in Louisville and would go to Actors Theater of Louisville a lot when they were producing a lot more. And they would, of course, have the Christmas Carol. But upstairs, you know, in the Black Box, they had a Tuna Christmas every year, which was the alternative holiday show, which I know is not done as much due to sort of problems sort of with the outdated script. So there is room for more in theory. There's room to see both. I think there's audiences that would love to see both. I think that this particular show, the Bestus Office Holiday Christmas Party Ever, I think it could work in a cabaret space. I think it could work in a site-specific space if you really wanted to get wild and do this at an office. At an office for an office Christmas party, obviously in a traditional theater. So I'm in hopes that this plays to younger audiences, you know, that are wanting to see something different and are people who want to make room for both, because usually around this time of year, people are willing to shuck out the dollars to see something.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and all that being said, it is like as depressing as some of the origins of like what we're trying to say with the piece are, it's a lot of freaking fun. It is just at the end of the day, a true party. And I mean, I even think like early conversations we were having about the show was like, oh, this is an immersive piece that you can tour to like different offices and different, you know, corporate companies and everything can bring it in for like their holiday party, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, first and foremost with this show was, you know, even though the party that the characters are going through is kind of lousy for the audience, it should be an actually fun party. You know?
Right. Well, is it adaptive like that in the sense that, it could be like, you know, the murder mystery parties that people throw that an actual company could actually bring it and do it as part of their holiday party.
Totally. I mean, the whole thing, it's a unit set. It takes place in one office. So as long as you have some desks and a filing cabinet, I mean, you're good to go.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. That would actually be really fun.
Right.
To be, you know, promoted that way.
Yeah.
Small companies could actually do this. And I guess hire actors or cast people. They could even cast people from their own employees to do it.
Yes, exactly.
Of course, you might want to be careful with your HR department doing that, but.
Well, yeah, that is true. That is true. And, you know, I would have to check in on the vocal ranges of some of those companies first, but you know.
But you might want to have a traveling band of actors who take this from company to company to do this.
Exactly.
Because there are, I mean, God knows, I've had friends who do, you know, like the caroling, and they go from like restaurant gig to party gig to whatever, and they have a whole, their weekends are booked solid with gigs going to different parties and whatever. And you could have a touring company of this that literally travels with a file cabinet and a couple of folding desks, and
exactly,
and they go to different parties at different office parties and do this gig.
Exactly.
And absolutely shocks the hell out of people. Yeah. Very different. And
makes
from
it, it makes it very fun. It makes it very fun, you know.
Because
I'm sure, I mean, I have not read the script, but I'm sure it touches on a lot of things that people at these different offices can certainly relate to.
100%.
Especially when there's, you know, the comment of not getting a bonus.
Yes. yep.
And dealing with the politics and things that go on in different offices. And I know the reviews so far from people like Variety and stuff have been very fun. I know Variety called it a glorious mess.
We were honored. We were so honored.
Which is exactly the kind of review you want to get for a show like this from a publication. Yes.
We couldn't have written a better review.
Right. So talk about putting together the cast for this when you were casting this, because you mentioned Paige Turner and Mary Testa. Mary Testa, of course, being one of the absolute great character performers on Broadway, period. Multiple Tony Award nominee. So talk about the putting together this cast.
Well, it's a mix of you know, Deb Radloff and Paige Turner, who have been staples of our development process in the past, and previous readings and previous, you know, developmental experiences, plus Mary, who is new to the piece and came in and belted that wonderful solo Sex Machine Robot, along with Ryan McCurdy, who has that sweet, funny, sardonic number, that bitch face David. So it's a real sort of mix of people, very diverse cast, really just a sampling of the larger score. I think this is about 1/4 of the songs that we have are currently a part of the script now. So wonderful cast and a real mix of people. And we were very lucky to get Mary. She pretty much came in and knocked this out like in 30 minutes and we were done. It was like, she's that good, of course. So,
I mean, and that was just like such a childhood dream of mine, because I think the best Broadway solo album of all time is her solo album that she did with Michael Starobin a couple of years ago. I've just always been such a fan of hers. And you know, she is a legend, you know, because she shows up and she does the work, you know, she gives everything, you know, whether it's a reading or an EP or a Broadway show or an off-Broadway show, she gives it the same amount of commitment and vitality. She's just so wonderful.
Expected, my intentions all were pure. Thought I'd have him dust the cupboards, fold the laundry, scrub the floor. But the robot didn't quite work like I'd guessed.
Robot?
Yes, things progressed. We transgressed. He touched my breast. See, when you've reached a certain age, the housework takes its toll on you. So the robot was an early Christmas gift just for us two. When you gallop off to work, just like some hollow corporate schlub, he'd be there for a shoulder rub. We'd move into the marble tub. I never intended to cheat. It was all in the moment, the passion of heat. After all, there's no privates, just cold metal parts that could pierce my vagina, but never my heart. He's a sex machine robot, dressed up like a gardener, Eugene, with a hat and jeans and fateful day. But then when you walked in on us, something snapped inside his brain, started glitching, chasing me just like a honky derailed train. Well, it trampled our poor portion, ate our darling little cat.
Not the cat.
Yes, the cat just like that. And he stalked me all over town. That sex machine robot is hunting me down, 'cause he's jealous of you, Ron. There's rage in his gears. This could be our last moment. Good God, man, he's here. He's a sex machine robot, and it's on the prowl. I nearly gave up halfway here to that sex machine robot. Nearly threw in the towel. But then I thought of you. Knew I had to fall through. You're the only one I. Though I messed up, I know there's still no one I know I would rather call my love. But this sex machine robot is trying to kill me, 'cause it knows that it knows how to sexually thrill me. This sex machine robot, this sex machine robot, this sex machine, sex machine, sex machine, sex machine robot!
Paige is just another person who I really have to call out, who has just been so wonderful through all the development of this. I write a lot of specialty material for her and for her cabarets as well. And her sort of point of view and perspective as a performer is just always so clear to me, even just like in an auditory manner. I just think she really like bounces off of the headphones in everything that she does. So, So yeah, it was just a great group to be in the studio with. We had a great time.
Yeah. Talk about recording the EP. 'Cause it's, you know, it's one thing to write a show and get it produced or at least put it up on Zoom, getting it cast and put together. But then you've got to taking the step to actually record it is a whole big process. Even if it's, you know, an EP of four songs. So talk about, it's an important part of, you know, I want the listeners to understand that having an actual physical, you know, collection of songs from the show is really important to getting the show out there and getting it produced and getting people to pick it up and take a look at it. What was that like to get the EP together?
Yeah, we all went into the studio together after a couple of rehearsals. We really wanted, you know, especially for all the group members, we really wanted it to feel sort of like an old school kind of like Phil Spector-y 60s kind of sound to it. So we had everybody in the same booth all together. You know, we didn't like bring in one person at a time.
Right.
We wanted to feel like it was that sort of communal office party atmosphere in the way that it was recorded. In a lot of ways it did feel like we were having a party as we were doing it in the studio. You know, it's a great studio, Mirror Tone, in Midtown. They have a beer stocked in the fridge and everything, so for, you know, that was perfect for this. It was just great to, like, you know, especially after COVID, you know, I worked on an album right before this, a year before this rather, that was recorded completely remotely. So it was just so refreshing to like actually be in the studio together making this thing and really feel like we are doing like an old school like cast album, you know. It was great.
Yeah, it makes it.
Yeah, especially with like the opening number, they could really play off of each other, and the Santa for Me, and these you know, non-solo numbers. I think comedically it worked to have them all in the same room as well, and I think you can hear that. It took us about 3 or 4 weeks, I think, in total, sort of in and out of the studio to wrangle everybody because they're all very busy, and some editing, and then some redesign work, and then Dan Fortune did his magic and sent it out into the world. And, you know, luckily around the Christmas time of year, people are hungry for new Christmas material, especially something like this. So we were very pleased with the press that we got last year, not just Variety, but a lot of stuff, even across the pond,
really?
A lot of attention. So so we're in hopes that goes a long way to get us out there. This is submitted to quite a few places at this time. So,
oh, that's great. Yeah, I was going to ask you, because the as you just mentioned, the EP came out a year ago, got out there for people to listen to. And I was going to ask you where the show is now in terms of, is it available for licensing, or are you, what's going on?
It is not yet. We are sort of shopping it around. Hopefully next holiday season, we'll be able to announce a sort of regional premiere for it. We're just talking to a couple places, but, you know, still sort of, it's still sort of open at this point. So yeah, after that, hopefully we'll be able to license it around. But yeah, you know, just
people are looking at it and listening to the music.
Yeah, and, thankfully.
Yes. And so what is the response? Well, I guess the question, my question then is, if people are listening to the EP and they're hearing songs, anybody's been sending you requests for sheet music that they, so they can sing some of the songs if they want to sing a song in their cabaret act or anything?
Oh, that's so interesting. I haven't gotten any asks yet for this one. But we're certainly open to that, you know, and anybody who wants, you know, they can reach out, to me at my email and, start that conversation.
Okay, good.
And Mark Orsini of Red Adams is our agent for this piece, and he's being pretty assertive about getting it out there to theaters looking for this material as well. So he would also be a great contact if people are interested in the show as a whole.
Yeah, because I'm dying to actually see this put on stage.
Us too.
I love these kind of irreverent takes on holiday stuff. They are so refreshing to see during the holiday season, and instead of having to, like you said, sit through yet another another Christmas show, whether it's a holiday pageant or another Nutcracker. I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just getting too old for this. I need something funny, and I need something that is smart. And that's what this is. So
thank you.
What's next for you guys? Are you guys working together on anything new, or are you working? You must be separately working on things, I assume.
Well, we're headed back to the Berkshires, and we're going to be working on.
Yes, we're going to our son's high school graduation.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They grow up so fast.
They do.
Leave our son out of this, Billy. this project created a number of irreverent holiday concepts for us that we're working on. So we're looking at a much different piece that is still poking holes through a holiday shortly after Christmas. And we're going to be working on that very soon once I get that outline sort of taken care of. So I mean, we have the same sense of humor, and I think we like to write the same sort of stuff. So my sense, it'll be, you know, the first of many of shows, hopefully in this vein that we work on together, whether it's, you know, for the screen or for the stage. Billy could feel differently. I think maybe he hates me, but I think that I can see that happening.
Yeah, I log off of this Zoom right now. I want custody of the kid.
Yeah.
Wow, this is getting into the little Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Billy, with a made-up child and fighting about it.
Yes, I know. I was going to say, my God, am I playing honey? This is
absolutely. Now that should be touring for office Christmas parties.
I think it should be Virginia Woolf Jr. You know,
yes,
they do the high school version of the shows.
Absolutely.
They should create a Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf Jr.
Absolutely.
And it's about a cat. It's about a cat that doesn't exist. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Right.
This
exactly.
one's only 2 acts.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I think that would work really, really well. Well,
perfect.
I congratulate you guys on the show. It's and the EP. It's a lot of fun to listen to. The listeners have heard a couple of songs as we've been chatting. And there are more to hear. Any hopes? Hopefully, once this is in a full production, we'll get a full cast recording so we can hear all the songs.
Yes.
You said there, I think, Drew, I think you said there's what, about 16 songs in the show?
Something like that. Definitely more than 4. This EP in particular is available on Spotify, Apple Music, and everything you can
all
stream
the
and listen
services.
To.
Yeah.
So, it is the bestest office Christmas party ever. So you have to type bestest or something else will come up that isn't us.
And is
not
there,
best
no not best it's bestest
B-E-S-T-E-S-T.
Is
yes.
there Is there actually a website for the show itself?
There is not, but there is a link with all the music on a site that we can.
Yeah. I'll put that here on the radio show page so people can go right. Yeah. That's perfect, because then people can go right to that and they can hear all the music right there on that site. Then they can find you guys online as well, right?
Yes.
You guys have your own web pages?
Yeah. So that's
my OnlyFans.
You stole my joke, Drew. Damn it.
Was that your joke?
Yeah. Damn. That's why we're simpatico.
You used that joke, I think, the last time we did this.
Good for me.
Now, how do we find you, Billy? We can find you a lot easier than you can find me.
You can find me just on Instagram at TheBillyReese and on BillyReese.com.
Okay. I will make sure.
And I'm just at DrewLairmore.com.
Okay. I'll find you guys on
Bug me on socials. Yeah.
No, I won't send anybody to social medias. I'll put websites.
You can bug me. I'll take it.
Okay. And they can subscribe to your OnlyFans page?
Yes. 100%. 100%. I'm running a discount.
All Christmas music.
You're doing it. Yep. And are you in an elf costume or anything?
100%. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it actually, this year's costume just got delivered. So.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. Mm,
okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Mm. Okay. I'll make sure to put that up there. Okay.
Yes.
And that is a level up from Mrs. Claus, which was last year. I don't think got you as far, Billy.
No. It was more high concept. You know, it was like Follies.
Probably didn't do quite as well. No.
No. It was not lucrative.
Thank you for letting us thoroughly weird out your listeners, Donald. We really appreciate it.
That's fine. It's perfectly fine. Half of them are probably going, OnlyFans, is that like Instagram? Is that, what exactly is that website?
It's getting to be very close. Yeah.
It is actually. Anyway, thank you guys for taking the time.
Thank you
so much for having us.
And I would wish you both a happy holiday season, but I know that people have issues with holiday seasons, as we all know. So I wish you a healthy, safe holiday season. And stay out of the stores. It's horrifying to be. It's horrifying to be in the stores. The Christmas decorations just give me the creeps sometimes. It's a little too much.
Oh, 100%.
It's a little too
deeply disturbing.
Yeah, it's a little disturbing. But anyway, I am so thankful you guys took the time to come on the radio show with me.
Thanks for having us. And thank you for introducing us to your beautiful CD collection behind you. For the listeners at home, it is glorious.
Yeah, they can see the inside of my office, which is a bit of a cluttered mess right now. But yes, they can see they can't see all of it. There's actually more of it they can't see, but that's okay.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
There's quite
that should be a Zoom background people could choose from, you know?
I'd pay for it.
Oh really? Oh god!
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of CDs. If I turn my head, you can see there's even more.
Oh my god!
Yeah. There's even more back. That's all cast recordings. This is actually just vocal recordings.
Oh my gosh! Yes, stuff. I know. I see Naked Boy singing and Prodigal. There's Naked Boy singing. Scarlet Pimpernel. Yeah.
Everything's in alphabetical order back there.
So. Yeah. Is that a Maggie Flynn? Anyway,
there's probably a Maggie Flynn. Maggie Flynn is up there probably. I'm sure it is.
Alphabetized everybody.
Everything's alphabetical. Yes, absolutely. Or else I couldn't find it. Anyway.